something strange in your neighborhood. Who are you gonna call?
Ghostbusters! Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Redeem Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. As indicated by this intro music, today's program's a special program devoted to Halloween music in different genres. Music Review was underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions.
Who are you gonna call?
And today's trivia questions come to us from AARP Bulletin, September-October 2025. Question number one, Monster Mash was a hit song in 1962. What was the name of the group who performed that release? Was it A, the Zombies, B, the Trashmen, C, question mark and the Mysterians, or D, Bobby Boris Pickett and the Crypt Kickers? Monster Mash, who did that anyway? And question number two, what was the name of the dance song introduced in the 1973 musical The Rocky Horror Show and featured in the 1975 film The Rocky Horror Picture Show? Was that A, the mashed potato, B, the peppermint twist, C, the time warp, or D, the chicken dance? Rocky Horror Picture Show dance song. Which was it anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October 24th. Well, it turns out that three famous classical music composers were born on this quote-unquote day. Back in 1685, it was Giuseppe Scarlatti. Back in 1825, it was Johann II Strauss. And back in 1838, it was Georges Bizet. Happy B-Day to all three. And it was 36 years ago today, 1989, that Hank Ballard, Bobby Darin, the Four Tops, the Four Seasons, the Kinks, Carole King, the Platters, Simon and Garfunkel, and the Who were among those inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And that was 1989 today. And as indicated earlier, today's program is dedicated to songs from different genres that celebrate the upcoming holiday of Halloween. So here we go with spooky tunes from country, classical, jazz, research, technology, pop, and local.
Frankenstein was the first in line. Wolfman came up next. Dracula was a-doing his stuff, a-breathing down my neck. Chop back, make tracks, here comes the hunchback, better get out of his way. Vomit was a monster's holiday.
Buck Owens, The Monster's Holiday, introduces our country Halloween music. It's entitled Buck Owens Gets Creepy with Monster's Holiday. Owens' 1974 Halloween-themed novelty hit was one of his final top ten hits before 1988's Streets of Bakersfield with Dwight Yoakam. This is written by Stephen L. Betts, published in RollingStone.com, October 31, 2018. On the morning of October 30th, 1973, one day before Halloween, Buck Owens and his Buckaroos entered Owens' Bakersfield studio to record the song that would serve as the title cut of his next Capitol LP. Although Owens had written and recorded lighthearted songs that had been peppered throughout the nearly 50 albums he had released up to that point, two of the last three top ten hits he would have were novelty tunes, including the supremely silly It's a Monster's Holiday, a kitschy cross between The Monster Mash and George Jones's The Race Is On. It's far from Owens' finest hour, but certainly worth revisiting on this, the scariest day of the year, other than Election Day, that is. The song peaked at number 6 on Billboard's country chart in mid-September 1974. Taken from the album of the same name, released in 1974, this monster mashup brings a Mount Rushmore of spooky ghouls back to life as they take turns attempting to scare Owens while he tries to sleep. In quick succession, Dr. Frankenstein's monster, Dracula, the Wolfman, and the Hunchback, a.k.a. Quasimodo, all show up, followed by goblins, dragons, and zombies, but Owens vows to fight back. It all ends mercifully in just 2 minutes and 30 seconds with a creepy spoken gotcha. The legendary entertainer died peacefully in his sleep on March the 25th, 2006, at age 76. Manuel de Falla's Love the Sorcerer introduces our classical music Halloween. It's entitled The Program Notes from Elamor Brujo, Mariana Williams Tobias, Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, 2016. Manuel de Falla was one of Spain's most influential and defining composers. He truly fulfilled Ralph Vaughan Williams' dictum that the composer must love the tunes of his country and they must become an integral part of him. De Falla stuffed his works with the sounds, rhythms, folk songs, and folk-like melodies of Spain. But he cautioned that in this process, you must go really deep so as not to make any caricature. You must go to the natural living sources, study the sounds, the rhythms, use their essence, not their externals. In our dance and our rhythm, we possess the strongest traditions that none can obliterate. We have the ancient modes, which, by virtue of their extraordinary inherent freedom, we can use as inspiration dictates. What he said indicated not only national pride, but conviction in musical authenticity and potential. Elamor Brujo, Love the Sorcerer, is a ballet pantomime in one act based on a story concerned with love, death, exorcism, and release. The story concerns two gypsies, the sensual Candela and the handsome Carmelo. The ghost of Candela's first husband haunts their love affair. Candela, knowing her husband's infidelities, entices her friend Lucia to flirt with the ghost and distract him from her new love affair. Lucia is successful, and Candela and Carmelo proceed to have a fulfilled relationship. Elamore Brujo and the suite derived from the ballet were stunning ambassadors to the world for the best of Spanish musical expression. Freed from the grafting of extensive European influences, its DNA is precisely Spanish. At times fiery, at times soulful, and at times passionate, this music speaks perfectly to its home country and its identity. Artie Shaw's Nightmare introduces our jazz and big band Halloween entry. As noted in the 7/18/17 jazziz.com article, A Short History of Nightmare by Matt Micuccio. Nightmare was composed by bandleader and clarinetist Artie Shaw in 1936 and was released in 1938. Shaw had been told that he would need to have a theme to play at the start and stop of the live radio broadcasts. Although many bands would often resort to using a Tin Pan Alley tune as their theme, Shaw decided to write his own. The resulting Nightmare was described by Richard Sudhalter as a keening, almost cantorial melody in A minor. As different musically from the theme songs of his band-leading colleagues, as Shaw was different from them personally and temperamentally. Nightmare would soon become a hit and an influential composition in its own right. Famously, for instance, it probably inspired the vamp of the James Bond theme written by composer John Barry. It also affected a whole generation of jazz listeners, jazz critic, Nate Henthoff remembered that my own introduction to the jazz life began with a record of Artie Shaw's Nightmare. I came from a home where any overt expression of emotion was calculated and measured, lest it roar out of control. Standing in a record store one afternoon, however, I shocked myself by yelling in pleasure at the first bars of Nightmare. Saint Saens' Danse Macabre introduces our music research and technology. The article title is The Unsettling Sound of Tritones, The Devil's Interval. This is published in NPR.org by Judith Kogan on October 31, 2017. Everyone knows the sounds of Halloween. Creaky floorboards, howling winds, the amplified sound of a beating heart. But back in the day, the devil was said to exist in a particular musical tone. For centuries, it was called the devil's interval, or in Latin, diabolus in musica. In music theory, it's called the tritone because it's made of three whole steps. Encyclopedia Britannica adds, tritone in music, the interval encompassed by three consecutive whole steps, as, for example, the distance from F to B, the whole steps F to G, G to A, and A to B. The reason it's unsettling is that it's ambiguous, unresolved, says Gerald Moschel, professor of music at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. It wants to go somewhere. It wants to settle either here or there. You don't know where it'll go, but it can't stop where it is. There used to be rules against writing music that contained this interval. Moscheles says that during the Renaissance, all music had one purpose, to be beautiful and express the majesty of God. Anything otherwise was studiously avoided. But once music was no longer shackled to the church, it was free to express all kinds of tension. The Devil's Interval was ideal for that. From classical to jazz to rock and even Broadway musicals, the tritone conveys feelings ranging from forbidden love and longing to fear and defiance. For example, Richard Wagner used the tritone to convey forbidden love and longing in his opera Tristan und Isolde. And Miles Davis walkin'. In jazz, people embrace the tritone as a way to challenge the audience in a way they didn't so much do in swing, says Hank Osnatsky, head of contemporary improvisation at New England Conservatory. And Pearl Jam, even flow. In rock, the tritone can be a sound of defiance. It's a gesture that is very confrontational, Netsky says. It really makes people pay attention and sounds a little violent. And then there's this. The tritone makes an appearance in multiple places in Leonard Bernstein's music for West Side Story. Finally, Camille Saint-Saëns' Danse Macabre, symphonic poem in G minor, opus 40. The song playing in the background now, the tritone is used simply to build tension. Michael Jackson's Thriller introduces our rock and pop Halloween entry. It's entitled 10 Things About Michael Jackson's Thriller, 30 plus years after its release. This is written by Lucina Fisher, ABCNews.com, on the 28th of November, 2012. 30 plus years ago, at the age of 24, Michael Jackson set out to become the king of pop. With the release of Thriller, it became, and still remains, the best-selling album of all time. Thriller went on to win 8 Grammys in 1984 and sell between 65 and 110 million copies worldwide. Thriller also continued Jackson's collaboration with Quincy Jones. Quincy was considered more of a jazz kind of person. Gail Mitchell, Billboard's R&B senior correspondent, told ABCNews.com. But Michael really pushed it, and out of that came Off the Wall. That was kind of an appetizer. It opened the door to that perfect storm of a relationship. After Thriller, Jackson not only established himself as the king of pop, but he amassed so much wealth that in 1985 he was able to purchase the Beatles catalog of about 250 songs. Thriller also changed music videos. The 14-minute video for the album's title track changed the way we view music videos. It was so epic, Yahoo Music reporter Billy Johnson Jr. told ABCNews.com. We had never seen anything like that. A mini-movie with a horror theme. For it to still be regarded as one of the best music videos, 30-plus years later just shows you how far ahead of the game he was at that time. The video was also one of the first made by a major film director, John Landis, who directed The Blues Brothers, and An American Werewolf in London. Jackson was always chasing the next Thriller. Thriller was both the best and the worst thing that happened to Jackson, according to Brown. The downside of his meteoric success was that he could never top it. It was a noose, really, Brown said. All he kept doing was chasing it, and it proved reckless. His addictions, I think, were really brought on by his never-ending quest to top Thriller. And in local Halloween music news, we have this article entitled, More Than Just Cannibalism, Raleigh Ryder Releases CD of Donner Party-Inspired Songs. This is written by Josh Schaefer, September the 12th, 2022, in the News and Observer. Of all the terrible stories of the world, few can match the dismal, unthinkable suffering borne by the Donner Party. The infamous snowbound settlers reduced to eating oxhide, shoelaces, and finally each other. In 1846, that luckless party of 87 reached the Sierra Nevada Mountains on the last leg of what had already proved a disastrous journey, crossing deserts so dry the children sucked on bullets to generate saliva. But buried in 15 feet of snow, their misery intensified. Overall, the details are considered too ghastly for pop culture portrayal, until now. Raleigh writer Alice Osborne has released a CD inspired entirely by the Donner Party's journey, each of its 13 songs narrated by a real-life character. She called her collection Skirts in the Snow. And she hopes to lift the luckless Donners beyond the cannibalism synonymous with their name, highlighting instead their stubborn courage. The cannibalism is what draws people into it, said Osborne, who performed her album in Fuquay Arena recently. The stories make them stay. The hardships, the bad decisions, redemptions. It's a Greek tragedy. Around her neck, Osborne wears a brooch showing a portrait of Georgia Donner, who was five at the time. They're heroes who can inspire us, Osborne said. They can inspire us to help a stranger, especially in these cynical times. It's about trust issues. Do you trust these folks with your children? Do you trust them to come back? Out of the 87 stranded in the Sierras, 48 survived. None of them killed themselves in the aftermath, Osborne notes. William Eddy married a wealthy widow, then a schoolteacher, before fading into quiet obscurity. Louis Kesseberg survived to make a bundle in the gold rush and then open a brewery in Sacramento. He died homeless, but he is still credited with introducing lagers to California. So as Osborne recognizes, the stuff of great art can be sifted from ashes, and the enduring stories of sacrifice can be often found in the scenes that make us look away. Alice Osborne's Skirts in the Snow is available for streaming and download at aliceosborne.hearnow.com. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, the song Monster Mash was a hit in 1962. What was the name of the group who performed that release? Was it A, the Zombies, B, the Trashmen, C, Question Mark and the Mysterians, or D, Bobby Boris Pickett and the Crypt Kickers? Correct answer, answer D, Bobby Boris Pickett and the Crypt Kickers. As noted in an AI overview, the Monster Mash backstory began with Bobby Boris Pickett's imitation of horror actor Boris Karloff, which was popular with his band's audience. He and fellow band member Lenny Capizzi wrote the novelty song, and it was recorded in under an hour with backup musicians known as the Crypt Kickers. The song was a massive hit in 1962, reaching number one on the charts, and it was initially banned, though, by the BBC for being too morbid. And the answer to our second question, what was the name of the dance song introduced in the 1973 musical, The Rocky Horror Show, and featured in the 1975 film, The Rocky Horror Picture Show? Was it A, the mashed potato, B, the peppermint twist, C, the time warp, or D, the chicken dance? Correct answer? Let's do the time warp. Answer C. The film's 50th anniversary is being celebrated this year with a newly restored version on tour through November and a 4K Blu-ray DVD out on October the 7th. Everybody's got their favorite show tune, but what was supposed to be just a twist on the twist? The buoyant and catchy Time Warp found a life of its own. The genius thing was, the time warp told you how to do it, says Patricia Quinn, who played the servant Magenta on both the stage and the screen. The only other song to do that was the Hokey Pokey. So, in preparation for all that Halloween candy coming up, let's get up, put your hands on your hips, take a step to the left, and let's close out today's program with the time warp.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely, not for very much longer. I've got to keep control.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time. Oh.